Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. Good morning, man.
How you doing?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Awesome.
We're back.
I got out of bed this morning.
Did you?
I'm here.
You sluggard?
Yeah.
You sluggard? Or no, you're supposed to look at the ant.
Yeah, the opposite of that. No, it's good to be here, man. It's good to be recording. People probably wonder what happened last week.
They do wonder what happened last week. You know, it's just the summer is a little different.
Yep. Yeah, so we wanted to make sure, and we appreciate that, by the way, the encouragement of like, hey, we missed the podcast. And in the summer months, there can be some inconsistencies just based on what's going on. So no need to panic. We're back, and we're roaring to go.
I mean, the reality is it was my fault, and I was not able to record on our normal day. And then sometimes when that happens, we're able to slide it in at a different time. And we just weren't. So we're so sorry. You get your money back if you like your refund.
Yes. All of our Patreon subscribers.
Our Patreon subscribers are season ticket holders. We will honor that for a future podcast. Actually, that's what we'll do. No refunds. We'll just honor it for a future podcast.
It sounds like a good
plan.
So
you can
get
into a future podcast for free.
Yes.
Even our premium ones. I love the fact that right now.
Commercial free. They're like, wait, isn't this the commercial? Can we skip all this?
Oh, gosh. Can we do commercials in the middle? And then now, but you know that there are going to be people right now who are wondering, wait, do they have Patreon? Is there premium content?
No, we do not. Just to clarify, none of that is real.
Have some premium content. That's where we do the hot takes. That's where you
behind the scenes looks.
No, that's where Jeff really says what he really thinks about the sermon.
Oh, yeah.
We have the regular podcast and then the one where it's
is this thing on? Yeah. And then I just go.
Where I just secretly record Jeff mumbling about the.
Yeah.
I actually mic'd Jeff up during the message. Yeah. So I could just hear what he says, mutters under his breath.
We get heart rate and we get.
Yeah. He's like, oh, that's a problem. I don't agree with that.
Oh, my word,
that's
Jay.
That's terrible exegesis.
Here we are back. So since we didn't record last week, we get to do a little bit of an intro to Proverbs itself,
yeah,
I think,
let's
too.
Do that.
Because we just, it's our first time for you and me to talk about it.
It is.
Together.
Proverbs.
So.
What do you want to
know? Well, first of all, I love the, I don't know how many people listening, you know, heard what you said it and Christoph said it and I experienced it growing up too, where someone, a mentor said to me, hey, if you don't know what to read, just look at what day of the month it is and turn there in Proverbs.
Yeah.
And I think that's really awesome. I mean, it's very simple, but the beautiful thing about Proverbs, I mean, it does like hold together throughout. Like if you read it in order there, you do gain from that, but it is one of those works in the Bible. Like the Psalms are like this too, where you don't have to start at the beginning to gain a lot from it. It's not like a gospel narrative where there's a story that's unfolding, right? You can't just jump in. And I just appreciated that you shared that too, because I think that's really helpful. Because I do think that many of us following Jesus, we have those moments where we're like, well, what should I want to connect with God this morning. What do I do? And unfortunately, if we don't have an answer for that, sometimes that's as far as that thought goes, right?
Right. I see so many people, and I was always this way too. When I first started reading the Bible, I thought I should start in Genesis. And so I read Genesis, I don't know how many times, because I would lose steam somewhere in the Torah, always in the Torah, I would lose steam. And then I would start again. And I would feel like, oh, I should probably start over. And don't do that. You don't have to do that. You don't need to read it. In fact, we would say, you know, we'd often tell people, I got to tell somebody this, it was 2 weeks ago, where they were just starting to read the Bible for the first time and they were starting in Genesis. And I said, you know, hey, I would start in Mark or Luke, depending on who you are and depending on how you're wired. You know, we can always give a recommendation on the gospel that we think would, you know, maybe resonate the most with you at first, because you're just trying to get into this rhythm of reading scriptures. And so the gospels is where we would typically tell people to start. But the same thing happens just in any time when you're not in the middle of a plan. I found that idea of like Psalms, because you can do it with Psalms. You know, also there's like a every 30 or whatever, you know, like Psalm 1, 31, 61, 91, like whatever. And so that can just give you an anchor of when you're like, I don't know what to read. And then what'll happen a lot of times is once you get into that rhythm, then that starts to open your heart up to saying, okay, yeah, but I also want to read, you know what? I'm going to read John again. You know, I'm going to read. I used to also get into this where I would feel like some books I would read too much. So then I wouldn't read because I wouldn't like, well, I'm not going to read Romans again, or I'm not going to read Philippians again. And then you realize, what? Read it again.
Yeah, sometimes I've experienced that too, where the concern is I want to do this the right way.
Right.
Or the best way. And like, you know, and that's why I think it's helpful to have these things in mind. Like, hey, proverb, pick a day, whatever date it is, read the proverb, because we can spend more time thinking about what to do than actually doing the thing sometimes. And just entering into God's presence and relaxing into him as a part of that is such a fruitful exercise, and he will be there. He's ready, you know, to be with us in those moments. So yeah, I think that's encouraging. I just wanted to highlight that again.
That was a better way for you to say it.
What?
Say it again. I'm even looking at the timer. I literally spent 2.5 minutes trying to say what you just said. We're often looking for the best way or the right way.
Thanks,
Jay. I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna cut all that out. And so then
premium subscribers only.
Yeah, premium subscribers only. You get to hear what Jeff really thinks about the sermon, and you get to hear all of Jay's unedited ramblings that go nowhere. That idea of just jump in. There are good ways, and there are best practices, and there are ways, you know. So if a person just said, "Well, I just read John 3:16 every day," you'd say, "Okay, well, I would expand out of that." It's not that there aren't better ways, you know, and that we can't grow in our understanding and our ways of reading scripture. But yeah, that shouldn't keep us as an obstacle from jumping in. So then Proverbs, which, by the way, I missed the first part of Christoph's sermon. So I didn't know that he had talked about that one day. So sometimes if we miss the sermon completely for some reason, we listen to the whole thing before the podcast. But you guys recorded the podcast without me that week, and I was in there for 90% of the message. It was basically right after he said that. So I never went back and listened to the first few minutes. And so I did, though, I did this past week in preparation for this. I was like, you know, I just want to make sure, I wanted to re-listen to Christoph's message because I wanted to make sure I wasn't overlapping too much and that I was leaning on some of the things, because I thought he did a good job with some of the foundational stuff. And then I heard that at the beginning and I was like, oh, here I am talking about, like, I don't know if you've ever heard about this, but they're like, you mean like last week? Christoph literally said the same thing. So my apologies.
There were two people that remembered. Maybe there were. The reality is we need to hear stuff.
My guess is that the two people who remembered are also podcast listeners. So there that was go. Probably fun for them that they got to hear that. So 2 weeks of Proverbs now, intro. And
well, I mean, here's what's on my mind right now. I mean, we can go anywhere you want to go with this, Jay. But so the themes that emerge in my mind from the first three sermons, right? Obviously, wisdom. And whenever I think about Proverbs, I think about wisdom. But I think key to that is this idea of the fear of the Lord. And you had said even at, I think it was towards the beginning of this last week, that people had been asking you about that between sermons. So I would love to just spend some time unpacking that, because that is such an important concept. So here's in my mind, with the idea of wisdom, the fear of the Lord, and then how that relates to lived knowledge, like the kind that you were talking about on Sunday, that is not just bookish, that's not just, you know, we can be duped into thinking because we know about something that we know it. I was joking with my boys. We were disc golfing quickly on one of the afternoons this weekend. And I said, well, you know, I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos on how to throw the disc like 600 feet. So no problem today. Watch out. Obviously, yep. That had no effect on my distance at all. But that we can do that, right? And in areas that are not trivial, right? Like in loving our neighbor as ourself and forgiving those who have, whatever. You know what I mean? So those are some areas that my mind is at right now on this Tuesday morning, but you're free to take it another direction.
No, I think that's good. The question, I mean, I get it a lot. Whenever you talk about the fear of the Lord, one of the questions I got that I thought was really well worded, that just kind of summarized it, is the person said, struggling understanding how do I have a fear of the Lord and also trust him? Like, how can I have that and then also believe that, you know, he's for me, that I can trust him and he can take care of me? This is one of those things that I was, when on Sunday when I talked about experience and how you have to walk that road, that you can't explain what fear of the Lord is any better than you can explain what love is. You know, like there's the whole thing where you try to define love. And even if you can get it down to a particular type of love, if you're separating it between like a romantic love or a brotherly love or whatever, still try to define that. It's very difficult. But if you have walked in it, then you start to understand. So when we talk about love being sacrificial, and you know, you talk about like Ephesians 5, which, you know, where Paul calls a husband to lay down his life as Christ did for the church. You know, the you can try to understand that intellectually, but you don't really, you start to understand it when you realize, oh, okay, so as I'm trying to lead my family well, I'm just laying things down, like my own interests, my own desires, like I'm giving up my life really for them. And if you try to articulate that to somebody who's never experienced that, that's a hard thing to grasp or understand. But when you walk in it, then you can start to see, oh, okay, that's what that means. And oh, that's why that's good. Like that's why that's a desirable thing. I remember years ago praying, having a really huge catastrophic thing going on in my life, and praying and, you know, begging God to intervene. And I was praying, and my friend who's with me said, he's one of my mentors, and he said, like, how do you feel right now? And something along those lines. And I remember feeling the fear of the Lord. Mm. I said, I have this overwhelming confidence that God can take care of this. And I also have this terrifying, like this terror in me that he may not. Like it was this weird, I couldn't even, it was the most real that had ever felt to me. Like, so when I think of the fear of the Lord, I think back to that moment where I was like, you are in control of everything. And you are only going to do what is for my good, even if it's not what I want right now. Like you are totally, and so this overwhelming confidence that you are the only one who can do anything, and also that you will do as your will dictates, which is for my good. And so that's that trust then to believe that whatever you do is good. But there was like a terrifying feeling about that. Like it's just like being in that presence and feeling his presence so powerfully in that moment. I don't know if you experienced like when you have had those aha moments where you're like, okay, that's all the things that all the sermons I could hear about fear of the Lord. Like that's when I was like, okay, that's what that is.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. And it's interesting that there's multiple reasons that we fear another person. And I think one of the reasons this concept is hard for us to really grasp and get it assimilated into our heart, and I think sometimes realize how we do fear him, and we don't always know that because we'd use a different term sometimes, but it's because sometimes we fear what will harm us. You know, like, so a person, we are afraid of a person who either has harmed us or threatens to harm us in some way or could, right? That's what normally, and God's people fear him not because he has harmed them, but because he has redeemed them. It's a response to his saving power that they have seen. So like an example of this that's coming to my mind this morning is Jesus is in a boat with his disciples. He is asleep and there is a storm. They wake him up freaking out. They are afraid of the storm and what's going to happen to them. Jesus, with a word, calms the storm. And this is what it says in Mark 4. Jesus says to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." They weren't terrified that he was going to harm them, right? they were like realizing their smallness and his immense hugeness, their powerlessness in the face of this storm and his obviously easy, more than enough power to deal with it. That's where that comes from. So for us, like especially this side of the cross, our fear of him will come from, I think, a proper grasp of his largeness, his hugeness, his grandness, and our smallness, right? But also in his power to save. It's not from his power to harm, right? And I think that's such an important, I think that gets at that question a bit. Like, how do you trust him? Well, because the fear and the trust, they're coming out of the same thing. They're like knowing who he is and what he's capable of. And I think for all, you know, if you imagine, you got to put yourself there in that boat, in that storm, to see a person with words do that would strike fear in any of his miracles. You would just, it would be fear, but not, oh my word, he's going to harm me, but a hopeful, look what this Savior can do. And that results in a proper fear and a proper grasp of his, again, ability to save and power and love. And then our total, like that's your description there that you gave, Jay, of our helplessness to save ourselves and to rescue ourselves and his ability to do so. It results in that, like the saving trust and reverence, and it ought to lead to humility. Like that's the proper response in the face of that. Because we know I can't do that. I can't calm a storm. And then we can get into other areas, right? I can't forgive a sin, right? Like he can cleanse. And I don't know. What are you thinking about right now?
No, I'm just thinking about how that kind of vulnerability is just scary. I mean, it is just any time where we surrender it, when we realize how small we are, when we realize how not in control we are, that's where this kind of fear comes in. And, you know, I wish we had a different word. Sometimes people try to make it awe or respect or whatever. And those things are all in there. Mm-hmm. But it's more of just a concept. Like the word is fear of the Lord. And that's what part of what I was trying to say in that first week is it's not, you're not going to get very far by just trying to define what fear is. Mm-hmm. You know, I use the example of H2O or, butterfly.
Yeah.
That was a scholar that said, I was like, that's kind of a funny. Like if you study butter, you study fly. Now I think it's maybe not as disconnected as that, as butterfly, but it's the point is still remains that it's not fear plus Lord. And so now I can understand what this is. It is its own concept, fear of the Lord, which I'm sure if I was smarter, I would know that there's some other modern language that has a concept for that is just one word, you know, but, and all I can tell people is like, I do think sometimes we actually see the absence of it more. That's a little more tangible. Because a proper fear of the Lord can get a little, because sometimes people are constantly afraid that God's going to smite them or that God's going to just trying to punish them.
Didn't you give that example of like, that there's a like kind of colloquial phrase that we have that he's going to put the fear of the Lord in him? Like as a response to, I don't know if you said that or I've just been.
No, you're probably listening to somebody else.
Well.
But yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So yeah. Like a person will say that when they are about to, like it's an idea of like that child or that person needs to be punished. We need to put the fear of the Lord in them. Yeah. So that in that moment, that is actually like the opposite of what we see like. New Testament fear looks like so imagine if I'm going to put the fear of the Lord into this person meant they are going to get a glimpse of his forgiveness and healing and transforming love that they have never seen before. It's going to be better and bigger and more profound than they could have imagined. And I believe that as we walk with Jesus as his disciples, like as we are in him, that's what we're getting at. Like it's not, here's the lashings for what you did, which is what humans mean when they say that, right? Yeah. It's like punish him enough and then he'll stop doing that in the future.
Because we think of wrath, like exactly. Put the fear of the Lord, like the fear of God's wrath. And that's where, if you get into more like a deeper theological idea that God doesn't have different sides to him, he is always who he is. So it's not like, we all know that we have different sides to us and that they can come out in different ways. And any kid that's ever known like about timing of when to ask a parent about something, or, you know, not things to not say to trigger them or set them off. God isn't that way. God is always in control and is like in control of himself and in control of everything else. And he is always, his love is his constant expression, which, you know, there's, I think I'd mentioned this before, but one of the professors at our school talks about how like it's everything is God's love, but to the, like, it's like the sun, and it's either the warmth or like a sunburn, but it's the same thing. It's not, oh, I'm going to do this thing over here to these people and this thing over here. It's like, he's just always God. And our response to that, it's why, you know, you think about, it is a fearful thing. I mean, scripture talks about too, like, it's a fearful thing to be put in,
fall into the hands of
the living God. Like, that's a fearful thing. And what makes it, but it's the same thing. He's delivering the same thing. But the question is, like, in Christ, we are receiving it as mercy and love and gentleness and kindness. And without, apart from Christ, it's that same godness is being received as judgment and separation and destruction. And that's a difficult, you know, concept to grasp. But again, this is why the wisdom of Proverbs can't be learned by just sitting in a classroom or just studying it. It'll just never make sense until you get to experience it. And even when you experience it, it doesn't mean you're going to be able to articulate it perfectly, but you'll experience it more and more. And a person who has walked with Jesus for 60 years will understand often the fear of the Lord better than a new believer. Although not always, actually, you know, even as I'm thinking about that, the Jesus talking about having faith like a child, I found often that new believers often understand that pretty well right off the bat because it's such a fresh experience. It hasn't grown stale at all. It hasn't become normal to them. They're like coming face to face with the reality that there is a holy God makes all that very fresh in their minds. And then, you know, and then sometimes over time that kind of softens, you know, and, but I think like the lack of a fear of the Lord where like it's flippancy towards sin or perverting of scripture or anything, like I'm sure you've felt this. When I know someone, I mean, there's times where people just say things about scripture or preachers or whatever that I just disagree with. And then there are times where you're like, you know, that is clearly manipulative. And it's popped in my head of, have you no fear of the Lord? Like, it makes me tremble sometimes just knowing like I could be wrong about this, or when I'm studying something and I'm like, oh, don't let me be wrong. But just that posture of, Lord, I want to be faithful to you. I don't care if a human being disagrees with me or thinks that I'm off base. Like that is a very small thing compared to, am I being faithful to this as best as I can in my conscience and before the Lord?
Yeah, it is. And I think to know him is to fear him. Like it really is. Like to grow in knowledge and relationship with him means that we will fear. And, you know, just circling back to that question that you got, because I think that's a really important question. How does that relate to trust? How do these concepts relate? You know, pastorally, one of the suggestions I would make would be to ask God to help you understand that, like in lived experience. So just to say, for all of us, I want to know you, God, the way you have revealed yourself, the way you actually are. And I want to fear you the way I'm reading in Proverbs and the way I see it throughout the New Testament as well, the response to Jesus or to God. I want to experience that, and he will teach you. He will. And I think the conversation around it is really valuable, like talking with us, talking with other people as you experience that. It will result in you loving him more and enjoying him more. The kind of fear we're talking about, because it's the fear of God, and you have to remember who God is and who God is revealed to be in Jesus. The other you know, quick story that I hold on to, Jay, when I think about how to understand this. One of my favorite places is Rocky Mountain National Park. I just love it. And I remember the first time I went there driving, I don't remember what road it was, but we're driving along the road, you know, getting higher and higher into the mountains. And you look over and it's almost like you don't want to look because you see how far, how high you are and how huge this mountain is that you're on. And I had, as driving, and our kids were pretty little, I had a sense of, oh my, like there's a fear, but there's also this, like, I don't want to look away because this is so beautiful and amazing. It is just so grand. And I think that helps me when I think about the fear of God, because you realize how huge he is, how powerful he is, how powerless you are before him. Like we are, you know, on a huge mountain, and how important it is to stay on the road, right? That's what I was feeling. That's what it's like when we know him and we get to know him better and better. We want to keep looking. We don't want to look away because we're afraid of him. We want more and more and more of that, which is really different than other kinds of fear we experience, because we want less and less and less of that. So I do think that sometimes the way we use these words, it really does matter. But yeah, for me, that helps. It's like, and that would be more, the word we would probably use for that experience that I had there at Rocky Mountain National Park is more of an awe kind of fear, where it's just so grand that I love it. I want more of it. And I'm afraid at the same time.
Well, we'd say, I mean, that the phrase healthy fear, we talk about that too. So you talk about using the phrase, I'm going to put the fear of the Lord in them. But we also talk about having a healthy fear of something. So if you're going to go surfing or swimming in the ocean, you want to have a healthy fear of that. And I mentioned that, like with the grizzly bear, it's not courage to come face to face with a grizzly bear and to have no fear. That's not courage. That's foolishness. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes, like if you go swimming out in the ocean, you know, when we lived on the ocean, you know, they have the flags out that tell you what the currents are doing and whether you should be in there or not. And it never fails that people who don't understand that, they think that they're going to be fine. And there's often tragedies that happen, you know, in so many different places when there's not a healthy fear of something. And that's what I was trying to point out, like the foolhardiness of, you know, hasten steps, and just that's a sense of like, oh, I can overcome whatever there is, or I can handle this. And you see it with people when they don't believe in God, and they'll kind of stand in judgment of God. And that just demonstrates like, yeah, there's no fear of the Lord. And without that fear of the Lord, then there's no knowledge of him. That reveals there's no knowledge. And then if there's no understanding of him, well, then you're not going to be able to receive his wisdom, right? Like if there's not a fear of the Lord, there's no understanding of him. And so no understanding of what he would teach. And so you could go to Proverbs and you're not really going to gain anything. So, you know, for example, when it says fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and in other places, the beginning of wisdom or understanding, I mean, part of what that's saying is that in order to receive any of the wisdom that's in Proverbs, that means a confrontation with our own view of how the world works. Yes. Otherwise, it wouldn't be wisdom. It would be just a bunch of nodding of like, oh yeah, yep, nope, makes sense, that checks out. The whole point is it's these riddles and sayings that cause us to think and process and confront our own lack of understanding. And the reality is you don't do that if you don't have a fear or an awe or an understanding of who it is that's giving that wisdom, right? Like I could read articles from an opposing political view that I don't hold. I could look at their articles all day long and read them, and it's going to constantly push against on any given topic. I could pick any topic and then pick the people who are saying the opposite of what I think is reality. And it wouldn't be along just party lines. It would just be like issue by issue. I could be like, okay, and I'm not going to submit to any of that because I'm going to reject it because I'm going to say, yeah, I think that's foolishness. Now, if I thought that was actually from the Lord, well, okay, now I need to submit you know, to that. If you have a random buddy that tells you, hey, this is how you should do your job, this is how you could do your job better, you'd be like, okay, man, I'm going to keep doing my job like that. But if your boss tells you, hey, this is how you need to do your job better, well, you're going to think about that differently, depending on your respect level of your boss, your fear of like him, not necessarily fear that he would do something to harm you, but like it could be in a positive way too. If it's someone that you really trust in that particular field and you really look up to, then when he says, hey, you're doing that incorrectly and you don't think so, that'll make you think, it'll make you wrestle with it. And you'll go, wait a second, why? And same thing happens in Proverbs. You read something and you go, wait a second, why? Well, whether you're going to wrestle with that or not is all dependent on who do you see God as? Like, do you trust him? Do you fear him? Do you believe that submitting to him is the beginning of wisdom? Do you actually want wisdom?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all that is what matters.
It makes me think too, Jay, I don't know how familiar you are with the Chronicles of Narnia. So kind of a famous writing.
Pretty familiar.
I mean, people haven't read it, but, or seen the movies. But,
well, I'm glad you said Chronicles of Narnia and not Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Well, both are amazing. Right?
They are amazing. Like, look, it's not a judgment on it. It's just, I have read all of Chronicles of Narnia. I read them all to my kids.
So the book,
I could not get through
Lord of the Rings.
This
makes me think of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Uh-huh. And for those of you who haven't read it, but C.S. Lewis wrote these children's books and they're just beautiful. And the Jesus character in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is a lion. And he's introduced as that. And it just makes me think of that and their response to him. And when these kids are realizing that this king is a lion, and I actually just quickly Googled because I couldn't think of the quote exactly, but this is what they say. Like, so this is the introduction to Aslan, the king, who is a lion. It says, Aslan is a lion, the great lion. Oh, said Susan, I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion. Safe? Said Mr. Beaver. Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king, I tell you. And I just love that, you know, Lewis and his brilliance knew that his representation of what Jesus, like God, would be like had to be this animal that you don't mess with a lion.
That you can't tame. You cannot domesticate.
No,
you can't.
You don't tell it what to do. It does what it wants. But man, if that lion in the story, you know, he saves them, right? He's this king and lays his life down ultimately. It's just beautiful how Lewis portrays it. But that's what results in fear, right? It's the proper understanding of who this person is. And you were just describing that, you know, and it's this triad. This is, I think, John Frame, but his triad of lordship, like it's his authority, which is unmatched. It's his power, which is unmatched, and it's his presence. And the three of those together are a being that has all three of those, where you can't tell him what to do. You cannot control him. And he has, he's actually with you. He's present.
You can't get away from him.
You cannot, you're helpless.
Yeah.
But he's good. And that's the good news, like, that we are proclaiming. That's right. Why we are here. That's why we're pastors, because that powerful being, personal being, is the saving king of the universe. And to know him is to fear him rightly, right? It is. Yeah. It changes life completely.
And it puts you on this journey of wisdom. So that's what I was trying to like give this metaphor of, like, you're kind of preparing last week, or trying to prepare for the last couple of weeks with Christoph and with mine, preparing for this journey. And then now you're kind of on this journey, and then how he teaches us. And so I do think it'd be good for us to talk both about that, but also, you know, I mentioned just a minute ago about the, how do you read it? If you read Proverbs and you're dismissive of it, or you're going to see like, oh, well, I'll see if I can take some nuggets here or there. Maybe I can get a couple tips for my marriage, or for my business, or for whatever. What would you say to a person that's like kind of uses Proverbs like that? Or you just say, okay, well, first of all, is that even wrong to, like, if you were going to say, man, I want to know what Proverbs says about how to handle money, which I'm sure we'll do one on that this summer. But what's the positives of that? What's the danger of that? And then I think it'd be good to talk about, like, okay, but how do you actually gain that wisdom? So is that, I mean, what do you think? Is that wrong to just go to Proverbs to see, like, okay, I'm going to Google what did Proverbs say about how to handle money?
I would say it could be. It depends, right? It really does. So this is what I mean by that. So if the motivation there is, I would like to be as wealthy as possible because at some part of me believes that that is the only way I'm going to actually be okay. That is the only way I will get what I really need or want or whatever. Then you're using Proverbs as a mean to an end that God does not intend for us. An end that he says will not bring what we think it will bring. Right. So in that case, I would say, well, that's a fool's errand, right? You're trying to use something righteous for an unrighteous end. So, but if your desire is to say, I need to submit every part of me, including the things I own and including the things I earn, and I want to learn how to do that, I think then that heart, because that's a fear of the Lord heart, right? It's a submissive heart, and it's a heart that's humble and wants to be taught by him. That heart will be, I think, amazed at what they find about money in the Proverbs and all the scriptures. And we've talked about that before, but so I guess that's my mixed answer. I don't know if you can give a yes or no. I think it depends on what the goal is. And we say this all the time, but I'll just say it again. If the goal is not relational connection and faithfulness with the living King, if it's about any other thing, any other kingdom, then it's on the wrong trail. You're on the wrong track. How would you answer that, Jay?
No, I agree with that. I think Proverbs is one of those books that it really lends itself to saying, hey, I need some wisdom in this particular area. So the caution I would give is that what you said is number one. Absolutely. What kingdom are you doing this in service of? If it is to gain wisdom, truly godly wisdom, so that you can reflect God's image, great. But if it is a, hey, I think if I put God's print, like, there's been just a lot of that over the last, you know, 40 years, where the idea of, hey, if you put God's, cause the idea is it's God's natural law. This is the way things work. And so it will work in the world. And I just think that's so dangerous. There are examples of that. There are examples where business owners, for example, have functioned in a Christ-like way, and their business has flourished seemingly because of that. I mean, off the top of my head, I think about a couple of national chains that are known for having they have Christian founders, and they have really great customer service, and they have great employees. Well, the part of why they have great employees is because they treat their employees really well, and they pay them more than they might get somewhere else, and they take good care of them. And so then that means people who they get a lot of competition. People want to work there. And so then you get people who really want to be working. They value working there, which means that they're going to work harder. And like, so it becomes this, like, you know, cycle that, yeah, sometimes that works out. Sometimes when you follow principles in scripture, that's going to mean your business will fail, because that's what God has designed, that you would, that which demonstrates that you are in service of another kingdom. You know, a business owner functions in line with the wisdom of God, the true wisdom of God, reflecting his image to the point where it destroys his own business. That has a different witness and a different testimony to the world around them than a successful business. God uses both, but both of them gain the real thing, which is intimacy with God, which means his kingdom and the fruit of the spirit. And so if that's your pursuit, that's really good. The other thing that I would say is, again, with Proverbs, take it as a whole. You know, because in Proverbs, there's also Proverbs about rest. and about the importance of not being overworked, that if you, that being overworked is a really bad thing. Well, and also there's ones like I read on Sunday of, you know, get out of bed, like don't be a sluggard. And so if you take that as a whole and you start to wrestle with all those things together, and then you look at it through the lens of Christ, you know, how is this manifested in Christ? How does Christ, that's what I was trying to do with the whole, the working thing, is that in Jesus, we see wisdom, full, complete wisdom when it comes to work and rest. And so it actually guards us through looking at the incarnation and looking at Christ. It guards us from our own propensity to take these things and put it through our lens of our own kingdom and what we value, and then perverting them, which is what we'll always do. So I would just say our we are so designed, we just need to be very careful when we do that, that we're not looking for what we want to see for our own kingdom. And unfortunately, that's often when you go to proof texting, or you're just going to look up all the verses that, you know, the Bible or, you know, Proverbs or the rest of Scripture says about how to handle money. What we're wired to do, you just got to be really aware and really cautious. What we're wired to do is to sift through that and to build, take the verses that make sense to us, or that we think that resonate with us, that we like, and we build that into a picture, and we kind of toss aside the other ones, and then pretty soon we've made a picture. It's like making this puzzle, you know, like we take these pieces and we build something with that, and then we see that as, and we'll even say, oh, well, that's what the Bible says about this. But what we actually mean is, well, that's the combination of the picture that I put together based on what makes sense in my kingdom. Does that make sense?
It does. Like,
I don't know. I wish we had a graphic or something to go with that, but piecing together to make basically then we end up with a theology of money that can be supported by several verses, but it also leaves out some other ones. And the question is, does that look like the kingdom? Does it look like how Jesus would handle it? Because you can, from Proverbs, you could make a really strong case for overworking people and like your identity being in work, and like what God really cares about is your work ethic. And you could do that. But when you look at the picture, you'd be like, well, this doesn't look anything like Jesus.
No, and I think related to that idea there, Jay, is, to me, it seems like we should tread carefully whenever we read Proverbs and we primarily think of other people. So if we read it and our first thoughts are not, Lord, have mercy on me, help me become the person who could do this from my heart. But if we're thinking about this person in our life who really doesn't do it, you know, then we use it like kind of like a weapon to maybe shame or to rebuke. And there can be moments of when we're helping a person in love to point them to a proverb to show them when they're curious. But it is not meant to be a weapon to wield, to reinforce, you know, our position or to harm someone else. And I unfortunately think sayings like this can be used that way. And you made me think of that just with the work, that we need to make sure and guard our own heart, that we're not just thinking about other people. I wish they would do this. You know, I wish they would get this, their act together and follow this, then their life would be better. And, you know, and then my life would be better. It needs to first be applied to our own heart and our own life. And it's true. There's ripple effects, right? We are all impacted by the sin of other people. We are. And there can be a moment where we can help someone with a proverb. But I think that we have a human tendency sometimes, especially when we make a composite view, like you were describing there, we kind of assemble a few of them without the bigger picture in mind. It can be pretty dangerous. And it just telling a person. So here's you started the sermon this way. This is what stuck with me, Jay, was what's we are not lacking in information. That is almost never our problem. It can be our problem sometimes, but it's almost never our problem. And we think, though, we think that that is the problem, and we think that's other people's problem, that they just lack information. And it, again, it's usually not the case. And so just giving people more information in a sort of rebuking way usually does not result in the kind of change that we would hope, that like a lasting change in our hearts or their hearts. That's usually not what will do it. So I guess that would be a caution. When we read them, let's apply them to ourselves first and primarily. And then as things come to mind in other people, I think a healthy response is pray for that for them. You know, if you really see it, like say a family member that you just think of when you read a certain proverb, then pray that into their heart, pray it into their life.
Well, and I think the other way of twisting that is, yes, definitely applying it to other people, but also applying it to myself in the wrong way, in a way that leads to self-righteousness, because and self-dependency, that can happen. So if I see myself as a wise person, well, then I don't need the Spirit. And I'll give you an example. I mean, one would be when I, you know, mentioned the ant and the, you know, get out of bed sluggard. Which by the way, was still one of the funniest, that was definitely the funniest part of my week last week, and was so encouraging to me and so delightful that I'm just laying there going, yeah, I probably should get out of bed. And then literally, why are you still in bed? But I think someone came up to me afterwards and said that he had a boss who would quote that proverb to them whenever they would have forced overtime.
Oh my.
And so he would quote back. I just looked it up. And it's different in the ESV than in New King, the King James, but Proverbs 23:4, do not overwork to be rich, because of your own understanding cease. Mm. And so he would quote that back to him, and that's part of the what I'm talking about, the tension of those and like understanding wisdom. But one area that I'm sure will come into a sermon when we talk about money. Is that I've seen people quote the Proverbs about money to make themselves, like to basically as their defense for themselves. So if I avoid debt, then that becomes a place of self-righteousness, because, you know, that a debtor is a slave. And so like, no, I'm supposed to avoid that. And so now So yes, it can be, we twist it when we apply, we think of other people, but a subtle way that we think of other people is really when we're thinking about ourselves and saying, oh good, well, see, I'm in good shape. And then what'll happen is, and I used to see this all the time, people would avoid debt, and that would kind of fuel a self-righteousness. But then also what it would do is it would make them really, ironically, it would make them very consumed with money. In other words, like, so all of a sudden they're like, oh, as long as I'm free of debt, as long as I follow these principles, I can do whatever I want with my money. So if I, so they'll tithe and then they'll say, well, I want a new car. Okay. Well, as long as I can pay cash for it. And so then I'm working. I mean, I would literally see people sell, like spend all this time selling stuff in their house, picking up an extra job, extra hours, so that they could make the money to buy the car. Cause that was their whole world just became about that. It's like this game of, can I avoid debt? Can I pay cash? As long as I can, then I can do this, I can do that. And pretty soon they've neglected their families. They've neglected, like they end up in the same position as the person who got into a bunch of debt and are a slave to it. You know, it's funny how that works, that you could end up in the same place. And so I think that's some of the caution, is don't cherry pick verses that just match your own understanding. Be careful about using, like, don't use them as weapons to other people. Now that's very different, by the way. Well, and then let me finish that thought. Like, don't use them as, don't cherry pick for your own understanding. Don't use them as weapons, and then don't use them as your own defense. Like, Christ is your defense. Like, stand before Christ and ask, does my life line up with him? Not, does my life line up with this version of this compilation of proverbs that I have kind of come up for myself? And then I just forgot what I was going to say. That's okay. Why are we?
I thought you were going to go back and.
No, I forgot. I literally just said, I forgot what I was going to say about that. Yeah.
That's okay. It'll come back to you.
So the last thing that I think it'd be good to just kind of land on is, which I thought we would spend the most time talking about because we've talked about it before, and it's always a good conversation about how God actually teaches us this. So this whole podcast, we've just kind of rehashed the idea of like the beginning of wisdom and then our desire for it. Because yes, if you don't desire it, you're not going to gain it. Like nobody gains things that they don't want, because now you could say, well, things happen to me that I don't want. Yes, but you're not pursuing something. Like wisdom is a journey, is something that you acquire, and it's not actually easy to acquire. It happens through life experiences and God teaching. It's easy in the sense of you don't have to have a certain intellectual level, you know, you don't have to even be a certain age. But it's hard in the sense that, okay, if you want to gain wisdom about money, then God is going to teach you lessons about money. And I mentioned the whole patience thing. If you want to learn wisdom about how to, like, pace of life and patience, and you ask God, please teach me about that. I want wisdom when it comes to pace of life. Well, then he'll teach you. And he may teach you in ways that aren't very comfortable, like getting stuck in a long line at the grocery store or at a traffic light or at a train, or your plans being foiled so you're not able to function at full efficiency, you know, optimal, you know, that happens a lot. Like God is constantly teaching me about pace of life by foiling my plans, and things don't work out the way that, so I didn't get all the things done that I thought I could have gotten done if only these things hadn't gone wrong. So what are your thoughts on that as far as like how God teaches us and what you would encourage people with?
It's interesting too. You mentioned it in the sermon, but like, you know, we want to grow in these areas, and then the very circumstances and events that are required for us to actually grow practically in them, we wish away, or we ask God to take it away, right? And I think that's probably unavoidable. Like none of us want to be uncomfortable. That's normal. I think what's really key in that is to remember, one, who is sovereign, right? Not just like that God is sovereign, but what is God like? I mean, we've been talking about that this whole time, but I think that's why that's so crucial. Because if you remember who God is and what he's like and how he's revealed himself in Jesus, then when you experience the things in your life that you wish were not that way, you can also at the same time remember he is good and he is God. And even if we don't know what he's doing with it, we often don't know the wisdom he's giving us or the way he's training us. Sometimes we do, but often I don't think we really do. We can trust that he is doing what is good, and he will bring us, you know, he will bring good into our life through the thing, even if it's not the good we would have wished for. So I think that's part of it. There needs to be a surrender if we are going to really learn from him, a surrender that comes again from the fear of the Lord, because it's an acknowledgement of my smallness, my need for instruction, my need to be taught and transformed, and his ability to do that and his knowledge of what that looks like. You know, so often I think what God is teaching us is that we're not God. And that is not a bad thing. That is a perfectly wonderful thing to learn, because that's true. To learn that lesson, and we learn it in all kinds of ways, right? But to learn I'm not God, that which means I am not all powerful. I am not the one with all authority. I cannot be relied upon to meet everyone's needs and all of those things. Like our life changes as we learn these lessons, and he teaches it to us over and over again. Even when the beautiful thing to me, the hopeful thing is, even when we are not conscious of it, like often these things are happening and we're responding and life is going on and we don't even realize he's doing it, but he's always at work. He's always at work doing that and shaping us. So yeah, it requires actual lived experience. And I love your point about that on Sunday. Like it's not just gaining more information. It is actual living out wisdom, living out the knowledge that we've been given by him.
Yeah, so when you think about different situations, and this is again goes back to, do we really want that? Because we often don't want God's wisdom because it would mean real change, and change is scary. So you know, for example, maybe you're walking through a really hard season right now and you're struggling to experience any joy, and you, like, the question is like, well, God tells us we can have joy in the midst of all circumstances. We can give thanks in all circumstances. And so do you want that? Well, if you do, then God will teach you. But a lot of times we don't want that because we're more comfortable in our identity of suffering. You know, it's just more comfortable. It's more known. We'll be afraid of what would happen if I let go of that. Will people still care about me? Will they still ask me how things are going? Like will they just assume, oh, they're fine then? And then they're going to go on because I'm not fine, but I like, you know, there's all that fear. And so we don't really necessarily want what God's offering because, and this is where part of what Jesus talks about, like you've already received your reward. Like if you give to be seen by others, you've already received your reward. And if you lament to be heard by others, then you've already received your comfort. Like, I think there's a parallel there. Like, if you want the comfort of the Lord, then he's going to give that to you through both lamenting with you and grieving with you, but also stirring your heart to rejoice and give thanks. So that's a hard path to walk because it's going to be sometimes walking in things that feel very unnatural and uncomfortable to us and what we don't want to do. That's why I use so many examples about getting into shape. Because every time I think about that, I think like, that's getting into shape. You have to be committed to this idea that no, what I want is more important than what I want in the moment. What I want long-term is more important. But then as you do it, anybody that is gotten into shape and is living that rhythm and that life, like those are the weirdos who say, oh man, I just feel weird. I haven't gone for a run today. And you look at him, you're like, what is wrong with you? And like, well, but what's wrong with them is their palate has changed. Their how they feel about things. All of a sudden, this thing that used to be a drudgery, the thing that they had to drag themselves off the couch to do, is the thing that they really enjoy doing. That's some of the beauty of what God does for us. But sometimes it's painful. I'll give you another example. I've had a lot of people who struggle with people pleasing, and they wish they could free themselves from this tyranny of feeling like they have to please everybody and have to, they want to be seen as the servant. They need that. They need to be, they want people to be happy with them. Well, if you want wisdom of like when God's, you know, when scripture says to work unto the Lord, that we are meant to please the Lord, that we're actually working for the Lord, that's who we are to be faithful to. And we can't control what other people, how other people think about that. Well, if you ask God, teach me what that means. I want to know what it means to work for you. Because when we do, the beautiful reward of that is, man, when Jesus says, my yoke is easy, my burden is light, like take my yoke upon you. It is like, it's a beautiful thing for God to be our boss because he does not overwork. He knows us completely. He wants us to rest. He gives us meaningful work. He's the best boss ever. And so if you say, teach me what that means, well, that probably means you're going to walk a road where you're going to disappoint others. That God's going to say at some point, like, okay, well, what one of the things, kind of like, you know, we got to work on your biceps here. We're going to work on your endurance. One of the things is we're going to work on your ability to find your hope in me and your identity in me, even when other people are disappointed by you. Which probably means if you're going to be released from people pleasing, you're probably going to have circumstances where people are disappointed by you in things that you did, where you did nothing wrong, mm-hmm. where you had to say no to this because you know that the better thing, what God was asking you to do, is to be faithful to say yes to this other thing. And they're going to feel like you failed them. And you and I both know this, being in ministry, this is one of the big things in ministry you learn very quickly is if you are in ministry for people to think you're great for being in ministry or to please people, you're going to burn out really quickly and it's not going to go well. You have to, like, God has to take you on that path. So anyone that would love their neighbor well or serve their neighbor, I use that one because that's just I think that's something that everybody has to walk through. But that's just an example of he's going... You know, the patience one is a very tangible one of it makes sense of, okay, if I'm going to learn patience, then God's going to probably do things and put things in my path that are going to frustrate me so that I learn to be at peace even when things aren't running smoothly. but also relationally, if I'm going to ask God, okay, God, teach me, what does it mean to love my enemy? Well, he's probably going to put you in situations where you now need to love the person that just sought to harm you, or, you know, a lot of different situations that you and I have both been in quite a bit in our lives. So do you want it?
Yeah. Do we want that? And do we trust? That's where the trust comes in. Do we trust that God is going to do what is good? And we can trust that he will, you know, and the things that he wants to see in us and wants us to grow in are for his glory, but also for our joy. And we're free. We're actually freed in the true sense of the word freedom as we learn these things, not in the self-centered way, but in the, I can now do what is good. I can now give away my power for the good of someone else. That's the kind of good. And the way of Jesus. It's been fun to get to talk about this with you, Jay. I'm glad we did a podcast this week.
Me too. Maybe we'll do one next week too.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. That's right. We'll see. Well, we as always, we appreciate you taking the time to listen. We hope this has been helpful to you. Please keep the questions coming. We'll also take requests. This is not a normal series where we're just walking through Proverbs. If there's a proverb that you would like us to talk about on the podcast, or maybe even it might work its way into a sermon, let us know. If there are ones that you're wrestling with or wisdom that you're seeking that you think would be helpful. I love hearing that from people to know that, okay, I bet this is something that people are really working through and struggling with. We would love to hear from you. You can email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com or give us a call or talk to us on a Sunday. We hope that this time has been helpful. Until next time, grace and peace.